Hello and welcome to Written in Uncertainty, an Elder Scrolls YouTube channel sat firmly in the grey maybe of Tamriel. My name is Arimithius, and today we're carrying on our series of post-textual readings with a look at the Annotated Anuad, or the Children's Anuad, or the Anuad Paraphrased. It's gone by quite a few names as it's gone through the series, and that to me says that they're struggling to contextualize this book, both in-universe and out. It doesn't have an attributed author, and quite how accurate it is a little bit up for debate. It's been taken as mostly correct by the lore community, at least in some ways. It's very much a simplified version, and we should probably bear that in mind when we're going through it. It originally appeared as a post by Michael Kirkbride on the Essential site prior to the Elder Scrolls 3's release, and hasn't really changed much since then, although it's had one of its more interesting names in that release. It was then called the Aelid or Bosmuri creation myth. So that gives us an idea of where this text has come from and potentially the perspective that it's bringing as well. So without any further ado, let's get to the text. The first ones were brothers, Anu and Padme. They came into the void and time began. Now this is a little different, even at the beginning, than most of the stories that we hear within the Elder Scrolls mythology. There's just your two forces, or your two brothers, and there's no gods, there's no creation, it's just, here is everything, it's happened. And it kind of goes from there. And particularly, there's the look at time. Now, Akatosh is nowhere to be seen, and Akatosh is very explicitly mentioned in the creation myths that we see from a variety of cultures. If you go through the monomyth, Akatosh is the time dragon, is the source of time in several of them, but he's not mentioned here at all. And that's a little strange. If we were to compare this with accounts that mention the Dawn era and similar terminology, then you'd expect there to be no time and it to be thoroughly disorderly. There's part of me that thinks this is down to it being a simplified narrative and a linear story, which is bound by some events happening before others, is the simplest way to tell a story. But there's also some reason for us to think that this is a different universe to what's currently happening within the Elder Scrolls, both from stuff that we get in the text that we'll get to a bit later, and some of the comments that have been made around it by Michael Kirkbride and a few other people. As Anu and Padme wandered the void, the interplay of light and darkness created near. Both Anu and Padme were amazed and delighted with her appearance, but she loved Anu, and Padme retreated from them in bitterness. Now this is, again, weird. We're getting other elements filtering in. We had time the sentence before, now we have light and darkness, which we could possibly identify with Anu and Padme, but it's not made entirely clear in the text whether that's what's meant here. So we're getting elements outside of these two brothers who are held in quite a few texts to be the primordial forces. In particular, when you look at the way that Anuiel is used, someone who comes after Anu in most tales of how the gods came to be. Anuiel is simply a force of order, which makes Anu, who's one step up above Anuiel, that much more a primordial thing. And so not really the kind of personified brotherly thing that we're seeing here. And we also get the creation of Nir at this point. Most people will say that it's the interplay of Anu and Padme that create Nir, if you ask around the community, and that may be what's happening. But again, because we don't get Anu and Padme explicitly identified with the light and the darkness here, we don't know that for sure. And just to close off the section on this particular paragraph, this is potentially the first example of what we see is an enantiomorph within the Elder Scrolls mythology at large, the event where a rebel dethrones a king and an observer decides which is the rebel and which is the king. I'm not going to go into detail about that in this particular video. If you want to have a look at what my thoughts are on that, please have a look at the Written in Uncertainty podcast, which has an episode entirely devoted to the enantiomorph, and that will be linked in the description of this video. So please check that out if you want to know some more details there. Nir became pregnant, but before she gave birth, Padme returned, professing his love for Nir. She told him that she loved only Anu, and Padme beat her in a rage. Anu returned, fought Padme, and cast him outside time. Nir gave birth to creation, but died from her injuries soon after. Anu, grieving, hid himself in the sun and slept. Now, if we think about this as an enantiomorph, we have a very definite victor in how this plays out. You've got Padme being cast out by Anu, who is the rebel who becomes the king, and potentially Nir being the observer here, who, as she's chosen Anu, acts as the one who resolves the conflict. But there are one or two alternative interpretations that are out there that position Anu as the observer of this particular enantiomorph. And as a final note, Anu is hiding himself in the sun, and we shouldn't really have a sun yet. We don't even have a mortal plane yet. There's no mention of Mundus as a place. There's no mention of the Arabis and all the various bits of Aetherius and Oblivion and those elements which are a bit more familiar. So where is the sun that Anu is using here? That takes us to an element within the Elder Scrolls lore which was only really revealed to us in 2012-2013. This is the point where Anu becomes the Amaranth of the Elder Scrolls. That means that it's the point where he becomes the entity that is dreaming the Elder Scrolls universe. When you hear people talking about the dreamer, that means that they're accepting the idea that the Elder Scrolls universe entirely happens within someone's dream or hallucination or altered state of altered consciousness, maybe. And the way that Anu hides himself in the sun and sleeps here, that's been highlighted during the original Amaranth hunt, that's the moment of the Amaranth. Again, that's as much as I'm going to say about that particular topic here, but if you want to check out some more of my thoughts on what the Amaranth is, how it works, I've done a Written in Uncertainty podcast on this, which again I will link in the description of this video. Meanwhile, life sprang up on the 12 worlds of creation and flourished. After many ages, Padme was able to return to time. He saw creation and hated it. He swung his sword, shattering the 12 worlds in their alignment. Anu awoke and fought Padme again. The long and furious battle ended with Anu the victor. He cast aside the body of his brother, who he believed was dead, and attempted to save creation by forming the remnants of the 12 worlds into one, Nirn, the world of Tamriel. I want to pause here and think about what the 12 worlds potentially are. We don't know for sure whether they are exactly what they are, but the way that they are combined together into one here makes me think of the Redguard creation myth that's related in the Monomyth text. In that creation myth, each successive world of Satak, the world serpent, is a skin that has been shed by the serpent. And then Sep, who is probably the closest thing to Lokan in that narrative, will take all those old skins, bundle them up together, and trick the ancestor spirits or the original spirits into thinking that this is a good new world and a good place to be. that's the only other place where we see the combining of many worlds into one, which makes me think that the 12 worlds are potentially previous kalpas, previous cycles of the Hour Abyss going from creation to destruction, and therefore all their various residues then being combined to make this kalpa a special one, a different one, if we're to draw the parallels with the Redguard creation myth here. Other than that, we don't really get much of an indication of what the 12 worlds are. The Elder Scrolls Online does talk about there being parallel universes within the Elder Scrolls, which this could be, maybe, but that feels a lot more along the lines of different possibilities, in the way that you'll see some people talking about different possible worlds, and so any differences between them are going to be quite minimal, and they also coexist, whereas with this one, all the 12 worlds are bunched together into one thing. So, back to the text. As he was doing so, Padme struck him through the chest with one last blow. Anu grappled with his brother and pulled them both outside of time forever. And that's potentially why we don't see Anu and Padme as figures that are worshipped within Tamriel, or at least it's this particular text's way of putting that perspective. While Anu and Padme are responsible for the creation of the Hour Abyss, for the whole universe in which the Elder Scrolls takes place, you don't see anyone building temples to Anu or temples to Padme. You see people talking about them in terms of things being aligned to Anu and Padme, which we'll get to a bit later in the text, but they're considered as elements which are different from the deities which are worshipped, which I think is said here in that they're both outside of time. They are then removed from creation entirely. The blood of Padme became the Daedra. The blood of Anu became the stars. The mingled blood of both became the Aedra, hence their capacity for good and evil, and their greater affinity for earthly affairs than the Daedra, who have no connection to creation. This is one of the points that I will call out as absolute rubbish. The idea that the Aedra and Daedra are set roles within creation, that one is entirely in one group forever because of what particular kind of stuff they were created from, is simply untrue. You look at Malakath, who was an Aedra to start with, who was Trinimac, and was then made into a Daedric prince by Boethia. And you also look at Meridia, who was a Magna Gae, who was one of the entities that created the stars, and she's now a Daedric prince because she created her own realm within Oblivion. So it's quite clear that these categories are simplified, they are basic, and they are probably not meant to be taken literally. The way that they're categorized, however, has affected the way that people tend to look at some of the entities within the Elder Scrolls. You'll hear people talk about Anuic or Padmeic deities or entities. Anuic means they are aligned to order, generally, is how it gets used. And Padmeic, they'll be chaotic and different, possibly evil. This text does talk about good and evil, and equates Anu with good in the way that this is implied, in that the mingled blood creates both good and evil. But it's possible that the Daedra are simply not evil, they're just different. They are entirely removed from creation, and so their concerns aren't going to be like mortals. They're going to be very hard for mortals to understand, and fearing and hating what we don't understand is a fairly common reaction even in this world. So the Daedra here are possibly being mischaracterized, in my view. I want to stop here also and point out that the way that the Anuic-Padmeic dichotomy gets put out there in most common talk, I think, is wrong in terms of how it describes everyone's actions. Anu is order, seems reasonable, but Anu also gets portrayed as stasis, and Padme gets portrayed as change. This is particularly the case in the book Sithis and in the Monomyth. But I don't think Anu represents stasis here. Anu is doing things to preserve the 12 worlds here, and also in his grief is wanting to go back to the way things were. It's grieving is feeling sorry that things are gone. It's not wanting to stop all change. It's wanting to go backwards. It's not wanting to stay still. And so I think the characterization of Anu as stasis is wrongheaded, shall we say. But one thing I do want to draw from this is that the pure blood of Anu, the stars, does kind of strike me as appropriate for the Magna Gae. Now, the Magna Gae are spirits that wanted to keep themselves intact and take part in the creation of Mundus. They signed up to create Mundus with Lorcan. Then when they realized, oh, we're going to die or be very diminished as part of this, they skip town. They go back to what they were before. Whereas the Daedra create realms out of themselves and interact with Mundus in a very particular way. And the Aedra are those that allow Mundus to form. Now, the Magna Gae are particularly Anuic in this case, if I can say that. They act like Anu in that they are trying to go back. They're trying to preserve what went before, and which is why they are the pure blood of Anu in this. They are closest to Anu's essence and Anu's motivations. On the world of Nern, all was chaos. The only survivors of the 12 worlds of creation were the Elnafae and the Hist. The Elnafae are the ancestors of Myr and Men. The Hist are the trees of Argonia. Nern was originally all land, with interspersed seas, but no oceans. I want you to put a pin in that no oceans bit. It'll be important a little later. But first of all, I'd like to highlight that Man and Myr are seen as both descended from the Elnafae in this narrative, which is very different to the Altmeri creation myths, which claim that Lorcan created men, and so they are lesser beings than the Altmer, and lesser beings than Myr in general, who are descended from the Aedra, and the men who think that they're created and that this is a good thing. Both of those narratives say that men are created and the elves are descended from the gods, whereas that distinction isn't made here, which I think is really quite interesting. It's actually quite a hard distinction to find. There's one or two texts that point it out explicitly, but otherwise it gets treated very much as being one and the same, particularly by the community, possibly because the idea of that distinction is probably rubbish if you think that this text is true. A large fragment of the Elnafae world landed on Nern relatively intact, and the Elnafae living there were the ancestors of the Myr. These Elnafae fortified their borders from the chaos outside, hid their pocket of calm, and attempted to live on as before. Other Elnafae arrived on Nern scattered amid the confused jumble of the shattered worlds, wandering and finding each other over the years. Eventually, the wandering Elnafae found the hidden land of the old Elnafae and were amazed and joyful to find their kin living amid the splendor of ages past. The wandering Elnafae expected to be welcomed into the peaceful realm, but the old Elnafae looked on them as degenerates, fallen from their former glory. For whatever reason, war broke out and raged across the whole of Nern. Can I just stop there and say that, for whatever reason? That's not surprising. If one side thinks the other is degenerates, of course they're going to fight. The old Elnafae retained their ancient power and knowledge, but the wanderers were more numerous and toughened by their struggle to survive on Nern. This war reshaped the face of Nern, sinking much of the land beneath new oceans and leaving the lands as we know them, Tamriel, Akavir, Atmora, and Yokuda. Now, I want to stop there and cast your mind back to where they were saying there was no oceans before this war broke out. If we look at the Elder Scrolls Online, there's a character in there that equates water with memory, water with the past. When things die, their memories become water. And this is possibly where that idea came from, in this world at least, because you've got interspersed seas, and then you've got a lot of death, and all of a sudden there's more water. That's a very, very stark illustration of water being memory, and the memories of the dead in particular. The old Elnafey realm, though ruined, became Tamriel. The remnants of the Wanderers were left divided on the other three continents. And that is a very different perspective on where the elves originally came from. The talk of a united elven homeland that typically gets called Ald Meris in other texts, or just Old Elnafey, suggests that it was somewhere else. There's virtually no other texts out there that will claim that the Old Elnafey realm is Tamriel. I think the Numantia Intercept is probably the only one, which has quite huge implications for how the world has been shaped since the fall of the old Elnafey, from what they are into becoming the various types of elves. It also means that the idea that Ald Meris was never a place, was only ever an idea, is both true and not, because it was a place, but it's also not the place as it currently is. It's a memory of the past, potentially, and all the various symbols that go there. But it's also something that you will see, that you'll see suggested in a few other texts here and there. There's some comments in Varieties of Faith that vaguely imply that Atmora, which we'll come to in a bit, and Ald Meris are the same thing. So quite how that gets treated will vary from place to place, but we have a very, 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 very unique take on it here. Over many years, the Elnafey of Tamriel became the Mer, or Elves. The Dwemer, the Deep Ones, sometimes called Dwarves, the Kymer, the Changed Ones, who later became the Dunmer, the Dunmer, the Dark or Cursed Ones, the Dark Elves, and a quick side note here, the Orsimer, or Orcs, often get called the Pariah Folk, and I think there's references to them being called the Cursed Folk as well, which would suggest that they have perhaps not the Cursed Folk in quite the same way, because we've got Dunmer here, meaning Cursed Ones or Cursed Folk. The Bosmer, the Green or Forest Ones, the Wood Elves, and the Altmer, the Elder or High Ones, the High Elves. On the other continents, the Wandering Elnafey became the Men, the Nords of Atmora, the Red Guards of Yokuda, and the Saesi of Akavir. Now that's kind of interesting, because you'll see a few sources debunking the idea that men originally came from Atmora, that all life began on Tamriel, is one of the more convenient lines that talks about it from the Numantia Intercept. But there are some other hints at it as well, both in some of the texts like Frontier Conquest and Accommodation, A Social History of Cyrodiil, and some of the comments that developers have made on the forums that suggest that the idea that men originated on Tamriel isn't some wild and wacky idea that goes against the established narrative, but is something that's worth considering. And the Red Guards of Yokuda is fairly straightforward, But we've also got the Tsaisi of Akavir mentioned as a race of men here. The Tsaisi in pretty much every other text are compared to snakes, to vampires, to various types of shapeshifter. They're not generally described as a race of men. There's a passing reference to it in Mysterious Akavir, which talks about the Tsaisi still looking like men. But it's not something that you'll see made elsewhere. The idea that the Tsaisi are men is very out there and has interesting implications for the various Akaviri ruins and invasions that have happened across Tamriel's history. If the Tsaisi are or were men at any point, then there's been some serious messing around with the historical record to make it seem that they're something else. The Hist were bystanders in the Elderfey War, but most of their realm was destroyed as the war passed over it. A small corner of it survived to become Black Marsh in Tamriel, but most of their realm was sunk beneath the sea. This is thematically quite interesting because of the way that the Hist are described as beings related to roots more than plants, particularly in some of the stuff in the Elder Scrolls Online. So there's a lot more under the surface for them, so to speak. And so the drowning and submersion of them kind of makes sense and reinforces that thematic element, if you like. And there's also the notion that they could have been the observers in the Elderfey War, thinking back to what I said earlier about the Enantiomorph and the observer being maimed as a result of the Enantiomorph. And the Hist definitely suffered by observing the Elderfey War and lost a good deal of their influence because of it. Eventually, men returned to Tamriel. The Nords were the first, colonising the northern coast of Tamriel before recorded history, led by the legendary Iskrimor. The 13th of his line, King Harald, was the first to appear in written history, and so the mythic era ended. And that doesn't make sense with what we know either, just to catalogue all the different interpretations that are in this supposedly simple children's book. The traditional history has it that Iskrimor was the first human historian because he created writing. He made it possible for things to be recorded by creating an alphabet. But why does it wait for several generations after Iskrimor to say that King Harald was the first in written history? It's possible that it's trying to refer to things that aren't mythology. There's a few nods in, I think it's the Pocket Guide to the Empire, when they talk about the various kings of Skyrim. And it says something along the lines of even assuming the kings before Harald are historical figures, which makes it clear that there's some doubt as to quite how historical the kings before Harald are. So there's question in the historical record. So whether it's history, whether it's myth, that's not really certain. And so that's possibly what this particular comment is driving at, although it's a bit of an odd way to phrase it. The first to appear in written history, without explaining the difference between history and myth, you can get a little confused, as I was when I was going through this. And we've also got a final piece of blurring and simplification in how the mythic era is described. You won't see that term used anywhere else, or not in many other places, and because they'll refer to the Dawn era, the Merithic era, and then the first, second, and third eras. The mythic era is potentially looking at both the Dawn and Merithic eras in one lump and trying to cover everything else. I think that's what they're driving at as they include the change of the Chimer into the Dunmer, which happened during the Middle Merithic, going from a few other sources. If you look at things like Before the Ages of Man, Veloth the Pilgrim, and the True Nature of Orcs that give us a bit more of a concrete date on when the Kymer became the Dunmer. Oh, sorry, not when they became the Dunmer. When they left Somerset and became the Kymer becoming the Dunmer does happen in the first era. My apologies. And as they're talking about King Harald as well, the first era begins with the founding of the Cameron dynasty in Valenwood. And I think Harald is roughly contemporaneous with that. I can't remember his dates for sure. I will look it up and post it in the comments once this video is done. So check that out and feel free to correct me in the meantime, if you will, because I'm sure that all those sorts of events happen around about the same time, which kind of signals the end of uncertain history. The Merithic era gets described as Elven history, finally linear, began in one of the creation narratives, I think the Monomyth. And so there's clearly some recording going on before the end of what this text calls the Mythic era. And that's it for our winding through of the Anuad. I do hope that you've enjoyed my rambling and going through and have picked up a deeper appreciation of possibly one of the simplest sounding texts about the Elder Scrolls creation out there. Just thank you ever so much for your time. Please don't forget to like, subscribe if you like this video and want to hear more of it. And I'll try and get the next text for this out in a week. And until then, this video remains a letter written in uncertainty. You've been listening to Written in Uncertainty, a podcast written and presented by Aramithius. The music for this podcast has been kindly provided by Jan Glembotsky and Jeremy Saul. You can find Jan's work on SoundCloud under Songs from the Lost Land, and Jeremy's Northerner Diaries is available for purchase and on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.